My name is John Nolden, and I'm accompanied by Laura Clough from the Food Museum in Stowmarket, and we're interviewing for the Dialect and Heritage Project on the 11th of July 2022. I'm going to address the questions initially to each of you, and then we'll do some joint questions later on in the interview. So if I can start with Andy, could I ask you to just introduce yourself, your full name, and tell me when you were born and how old you are now, if that's okay.
My name is Andreas Owen Beaumont, but I've been known as Andy nearly all my life. I was born in 1959 at the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital in Norwich, which doesn't exist anymore, only in part. I'm now 63 years of age, been married for 41 years. I have two children and three grandchildren.
Okay, Andreas is not a Norfolk Christian name. Do you know where that might have been? Your parents may have?
My father did national service in Cyprus. I think the timing of that was about 1957. He was out there for just over a year or so, and I presume he picked that name up there. Don't know where the Owen comes from. He's got the name Owen. It might have been after somebody in the village that, you know, I can't remember. I remember the name Owen Dale as possibly a link, but I don't know for sure.
Okay, and so you were born in the hospital in Norwich, but then whereabouts did you grow up, Andy?
In Ludham. We first lived in one of the flats that are just beyond Laurel's Crescent. I think they're part of Laurel's Crescent in Ludham. I can't remember the name, the number of the flat. I think it was a downstairs one. We lived there for a little while. Then I think possibly when you were expected, I say you, Martin, my brother Martin, we moved to School Road, which is a bungalow that was just next door to the district nurse's house. Martin and Kay, my sister, were born there, and when Kay came along, we had to move to a bigger house because it only had two bedrooms. We then moved to Sorrels Crescent, and I lived there until I got married.
And did you go to school in the local village school?
Went to the primary school. I passed the 11 plus and did my secondary education at the school that was later known as Oriel Grammar in Galston. So it was a long journey to school and back every day. But I did my exams, and then I'd had enough of exams, so decided to go into work, and I applied to Norwich Union to get a position there. I think I had a very short interview prior to getting the results to the exams, but they offered me a place in either the what do they call it, their advertising department, art department, or, as I was also interested in numbers, they said, would you like a job in the accounts? As I liked painting as a hobby, and that, I thought, well, I won't go down the work route that way, I'll stick with numbers. So I went into the accounts department in 1977, I believe, and worked in that field for the remainder of my career. And now I'm retired. I took early retirement, and enjoying family life.
So you, how old were you when you actually started going out to work? Did you finish kind of any exams?
I did A levels was the maximum that I did for exams. 1977 was when I started, so I would have been 18, I suppose, thereabouts. So, and I finished work when I was 49. So.
And you stayed in London for.
Once I got married in 1981, my wife and I lived in Stalham. Bought one of the new houses that were being built on the. Linford Road estate. It was known as Trend Housing built the houses, and we bought a small semi-detached three-bedroom house, and that was where we had our children, although Emma was born in the hospital where I was born, basically. But Thomas was born in the house. We lived there, and then when the children were getting a bit older, we felt we weren't happy with being there any longer. We stayed there for about 18 years. We started to look for another place and moved here in 1998.
Catfield,
1998. So we've been here now for 23 years,
okay.
Or 1999 possibly.
And so you're unusual that you've served your whole career in one job.
Yeah.
So outside of work, did you have any kind of hobbies or pastimes?
Well, used to be into fishing, didn't we, Martin, in a big way. Used to play in the village snooker club. Used to play in leagues. The Yarmouth League, but I also played snooker at work in some of the Norwich leagues. Fishing was a big interest, quite time consuming. I wish I had my time again, because I wouldn't spend all the time that I did fishing. I would have liked to spend more time with my family, if I'm honest.
Okay, well, it's interesting you mention that, because that's you know, the original person who was interviewed as part of this project back in 1957, Abby Ather Jermy, who's your great grandfather's brother, also used to do fishing around the Ludham area.
We used to fish.
Would it be things like eels or not?
Well, we would curse eels, I think, if we caught them, but we wouldn't fish to catch them and keep them as food. No, we would just fish for pleasure. Places like Wilmack. I can visualise a particular corner at the far end of Wilmack, which we would head for. Can picture it now, the specific boats that were sitting there. It was a nice, lovely little boat called Fanny Ann that used to be moored just opposite. Used to fish down in Hunter's Boatyard, where the Heritage Fleet resides. Percy, the owner, wouldn't mind locals fishing in the boatyard, providing you were careful and didn't leave tackle lying around. But one of the places I used to like to go was beyond that and go round down towards Wilmack on the edge. From the boatyard, go down and fish in a quiet little dike, which I believe is now where they keep the Wherry Albion now, because they expanded the whole site. But at the time, when I was young, there was just a tiny little dike that came in, and I used to fish in there for roach and little tiddlers. Cold Harbour was another place I used to go to, which is down Staithe Road, and and you continue down past where Edward Seat lived, and we used to fish in behind his. Again, we used to, in fact, that's where Father introduced us to fishing, didn't he, down that little dike that is behind Hall Common Farm, which I don't think you're allowed to go down there anymore now, that's private, but at the time that was always open.
That's also where Abbey Ethel Jeremy lived in Coltava.
Ah, right. Yeah, well, that's where my father was born. St. Bennet's Abbey was another place that we used to fish. Used to be a lovely sandy bays, but later on the archaeological people were worried about erosion caused by the boots of the remainder of the abbey ruins that bordered the edge of the river. So they put in a lot of these cages containing rocks to so they made it more, and then covered it with earth, so they made it different how I remember it. It's, you know, nice sandy beaches where you could wade in the river, and but it's all covered up now. Coming back, Howe Hill was another place. Johnny Crow's, which is down Sharp Street. There's another place called, down Turf Fen? Dobbins. Yeah, let's call that Dobbins. Go down there and fish by the River Ant off a little dike that came off the River Ant.
So when you met how did you meet your wife? Did you meet, was it like a local village hall kind of disco or something?
Yes, it did. Yes. I can remember I'd seen this lovely long-haired young lady walking around in the village, and she caught my eye a few times. I even fell off my bike one day when I went past her down near Wilmack and fell in the hedge. But I laugh about that now. But yes, she was quite a head turner, and I met her in the local village hall on one of the Friday night discos, where you paid your 50 pence or whatever it was to go in, and there was a DJ playing music. Yes, and in actual fact, it's coincidental that it was exactly this day that I met my wife. This actual date in 1970. She'll kick me if I can't remember the exact year, but it was about 1975 or something like that. I think 1975 that I met her, and we were together for several years before we got married in 1981.
Okay, what I'm going to do is just switch over to ask Martin some questions now, and then we'll do some joint ones at the end, if that's okay. So Martin, hello. Can you tell us when you were born and how old you are now?
I was born in 1960, which makes me 62 now, and I was born at number 7 School Road, Ludham. And then, like my brother said, we then moved up to my lucky number. I've been married 34 years this year, I think it is. I'm now coming up to my anniversary. I married a local girl. Her name, she's known as Sally, but her real name is Suzanne. And her parents now live right opposite where I live now, so we can keep an eye on. He's a bit of a character. He worked on a local farm at Ritchie's for, I think, most of his working life, spraying fields and what have you. When I left school in 1977, I worked in Ludham Manor, as an upholsterer for a chap by the name of Adrian. I think he's retired now. And I used to do loads of butts over at Brundle, lining them out, head linings and side linings. Done that for 7 years. And we went through a recession and I got made redundant. And I was out of work for only a few months, so I don't even think I claimed any benefits. And I got a job working for an antique dealer at Coleshill. And I still work part-time for him now on a self-employed basis, doing antique furniture. But I had a bit of a midlife crisis in that in 2000 my back went, and whether that was anything to do with lifting heavy bits of furniture, because they were pretty heavy, but I started to reduce my hours working for Mr. Bates, and I started to become a reed and sedge cutter, which is what I do now. Self-employed, cutting the reed in the winter time with a machine, but I still occasionally have to use a scythe when the water come up, and that's too deep for the engine of the mower to go in, so instead of the engine cutting out and you can't earn no money, I used to go in and cut with a scythe. And if you weren't cutting it with a scythe, you could cut it with a hook. The hardest bit of the job ain't so much the cutting as the getting it out to a bit of hard standing ground where the thatcher can pick the reed and sedge up. Because I cut sedge as well, you cut that in the summertime. And that's hard work. Very hot, lots of biting insects. You aren't standing in water in the summertime, that's one good thing, where in the wintertime you're quite often halfway up your calves standing in cold water. But it's a wonderful life. You see all the birds, and the swallowtail butterflies in the summertime. That's the best job in the world, and I absolutely love doing it, and I'm hoping to continue doing it until my old buns give up. I must admit one of my shoulders is playing up now, but the person who taught me, I think he was cutting certainly into his late 70s, and that might even been into his 80s. So if I can keep going as long as he did, I'll be happy.
And when you're cutting that reed, presumably that's going on to thatched properties.
Long that stay local. I deal with a local thatcher, and quite a lot of my reed has gone on local churches, to name one or two. Flegborough Church was done with my reed. And the chancel at Thurn was done with my reed. But there's been one or two others as well. I think Heronfleet Church was done by it. The sedge, that all stay fairly local, although there's a thatcher that comes all the way from Cambridge who come and pick up 600 bunches every year. From Wood Bastwick. I cut Wood Bastwick sedge and reed. I cut Howe Hill reed. Smallborough Common Fen, I cut just sedge and a little bit of reed down there. Barton Turf. I cut a little down there of sedge, about 1,000 bundles down there every 4 years we cut it. You don't cut sedge annually like you do reed. You cut it every 4 years. You've got to got to wait for the plant to get to a certain length. That will be at least as high as what you are, about 5 or 6 foot long. But reed, we tend to cut that every year, sometimes every second year, which is what they call double wile.
How quickly can it go onto a property then?
The sedge, well, I tend to dry mine on the bed for a couple of weeks. If I get really dry, I think they chuck water on it before they put it on the roof to make it more pliable. Otherwise, that's a bit brittle. But they can't bend the reed over the ridge, so that's why they use the sedge.
And sedge doesn't last as long as reed?
Sedge only lasts about 10 to 15 years, apparently, but I have seen some sedge ridges where they're 20 years. That depends on who put it on. If that's been put on prop and nice and tight, that perhaps lasts a bit longer than someone who put it on a bit loose.
What's the difference between the sedge and the reed?
The sedge is what they call saw sedge. It's got a serrated edge on it, so when you're cutting it, you've got to wear gloves, otherwise that literally cuts your hands to shreds. Like I say, the sedge is used on the ridge because that's pliable, where the reed won't bend over the tops. I think in Holland they use tiles instead of sedge, and whether that's because they hang up the sedge beds over there like what we have in the Broads, because I think most of the sedge cut grows in the Broads. I don't know whether there's sedge in other parts of the country. I don't think there's a great deal. That's mainly in the Broads.
Does it look the same as the reed?
Reed is a long, almost bamboo-like grass, where the sedge is made up of almost triangular. When you cut it, that's almost triangular in shape, but if you pull it apart, that'll divide up into about 6 different pieces of grass. So like I say, when that's dried, that tends to open up.
How do you price it, Martin? How is it priced?
The reed is priced by the bundle and sage is priced by the bunch. A bundle of reed, you bond the distance around, or the circumference around where your string holds the bundle together, has to be 24 inches in the Broads. I think the imported stuff is a lot smaller. I think, actually, I remember measuring one and I think it was about 17 inches. So the import stuff, you'll need quite a few more bundles to do a roof than what you will the Norfolk reed, but we just can't cut enough in the Broads to meet the demand, so we have to rely on imported stuff coming in.
What's the price of a bundle of reed now?
When I first started, a bundle of reed was making £2 a bundle, and a bunch of sedge was making £1.20 a bundle, I think it was. Now I'm selling mine at £3.60 a bundle of reed and £3.50 for a bundle of sedge. So you can make a living out on it. There's no getting away from it. But a lot of the time you're working for not a number of weeks. In the winter time when we're cutting reed, you can go 3 to 4 months without any pay because you're busy trying to harvest your crop rather than dressing it out and getting it ready for the thatcher to pick it up, because you've got that window from Christmas to Easter to get your cutting done before your regrowth come up, the colt, they call the colt, and you've got to finish as soon as that new regrowth come up, otherwise you'll muck it up for the next year, you see.
It's not the best of weather conditions.
No, and like I say, in the winter time, you might start cutting on a dry bed, And then, bless me, a few days later, that come up and you're standing in a couple of foot of cold water. And that's what I would say when I go on cutting with the side.
Do you have to wear waders or something to protect
your legs? Yeah, that's another thing. You have to have your waders on. So when you come home, your legs are really quite damp because you're sweated in them. And I used to get terrible cramps. I actually went to the doctors about it, and his advice was to drink plenty of tonic water. So I always have a can of tonic water beside my bed now. So if I get cramp in the night, I can quickly have a swig. Yeah.
I didn't know that was a cure for cramp.
That is, that's got something in it. Apparently that occur, but yeah, that do work.
So, yeah. Andy, what's your first memories of Martin, and what did you do when you were young together?
First memories, yeah, well, I suppose when we were still living at School Road, used to play in the...
We used to catch...
In the garden.
Bumblebees and what here on the flowers out the front, and...
Dad had a rockery that was made out of concrete that he'd salvaged from the aerodrome. And they started breaking up some of the runways. He salvaged a load of pieces of rock and made a staggered rockery. I've got a picture of him sat on it, but Dad liked his plants. Yeah, we used to just sort of play in the garden, didn't we? And, Mother used to
Our Nan and Grandad, they lived down the bottom of the garden, didn't they?
Yeah, we could
so
go
we
visit.
Could go, we didn't even have to go out on the road, did we? We just walked down the garden and through a gate.
Yeah, Dad's mum and dad lived in the bungalow just at the back of ours, so they were just on the doorstep. We used to do a bit of gardening, didn't we?
We used to growls sunflowers and see who'd get the tallest. Yeah. Nearly always used to cheat though, I think.
Dahlias, used to grow dahlias, flowers. The district nurse next door, she didn't mind us if we went in their garden as well. And we had little bikes that used to go up and down the concrete paths, didn't we? When we were a little bit older, Mum used to go fruit picking, didn't she? And
used to take me to Wharton's.
And we'd play at Wharton's at Philby.
There was one time when I found a bird's nest, and that was in a... I think that was a row of runner beans. She used to string the beans as well as pick them. Yeah. I found this blackbird's nest that was, and I picked one of the eggs out, and I chucked it up in the sky as high as I could get it, and that came down and landed right on my head, and that was a rotten one. And anyway, I spent the journey home in the back of the Land Rover with my head stuck out the back because the local women didn't want me smelling inside it. I can remember that.
Yeah.
But my mother reckoned she used to spend a half a day whacking and the other half looking for me.
Do you remember the big water tanks?
We used to get a tub, didn't we, off the ice cream cart and stick a stick through it to make like a little scoop to catch these sticklebacks or minnows or something that used to swim about in them, didn't they?
The place is still there, Charlie Wharton's in Philby. Yeah, so.
I got a feeling that's where I got impetigo one of them old tanks. That used to be a bit stagnant, didn't it?
It was mainly black currants and runner beans that one picked there, and then sometimes she'd go down to Howe Hill.
She used to pick guzgogs. We used to call them guzgogs, didn't we?
Gooseberries.
And what did your dad do? What was his
dad worked in the
London foundry.
Yeah, he was as a non-ferrous foundry owned by Mr. Brooks.
He was a moulder, wasn't he? He used to do the moulds.
Yeah. filthy place, really. That was a very dirty place, and I've been in there a few times. They use furnaces to melt things like brass or gunmetal and make things like boot fittings,
rubbers for propellers, didn't they?
Yeah,
and so keels. They used to do keels for yachts, didn't they?
Yeah.
The lead keels, I think.
But it was a dirty job, and
there always was a funny smell about it, like
probably lots of gases given off.
Burning smell about it, didn't they?
But he worked there for many years, but eventually the place folded and he was made redundant. But yes, the site is still there. It's right beside the church, and it was taken over by Trend, and I think now it's sort of like a community type concern. Do they do like arts and music or something
in there? I don't know. I thought that they when that closed,
there's a woodworking place at the front.
Yeah, at the front, what used to be the where they used to do all the turning, didn't they?
Yeah.
Where the lathes and that were.
Machine shop.
Yeah.
And then
I thought the back, weren't they doing duct work for heating and what have you in factories there when that first closed? But what it is now, I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, that's where Dad worked most of his life. And but in his later years, after he'd been made redundant there, he did sort of labouring for builders and things like that. He had a hard time, my dad, in his last few years. He wasn't happy.
He was happiest out in his garden, wasn't he?
Yeah, he loved gardening. He cultivated the garden of Hoss Crescent for over 40 years. We moved there in about 1970, I think.
Yeah. And
when he died in 2012.
When he passed,
42 years he had there.
The next year after he'd passed, there were all these poppies came up on his garden.
The whole
absolutely covered in these double.
Full of these poppies, tall type poppies.
So I actually wonder whether before he died he went out there with a pocket full of seed and scattered them.
Because
he did like collecting seed, and I remember he had some yellow poppies that he chucked about the village, but I don't think any of them ever did come up, did they? But he also used to grow little trees in pots, didn't he? And he'd take them out in the village. So there's one or two trees around the village, like down Lover's Lane. All them chestnut trees he grew from seed that are down there. And I think there's a couple of walnut trees along Catfield Road, isn't there, what he grew.
Yeah.
But he dug up out of his garden, didn't he? And he planted. And I think I've seen a lot of archives that states that Philip Beaumont planted these walnut trees along Catfield Road.
Yeah, let's get back to where we used to play in the village then.
Latchmore
Park.
See, when we were boys, there was no...
There were the remains of...
There weren't the estates other than council properties, were there? I mean, Willow Way hadn't been built.
Our main places we used to play were in the Vicarage, Latchmore Park, up the Wreck there with the playing field, or up the Village Hall. But that was mainly Latchmore.
In the Vicarage, we played a lot in the Vicarage, didn't we? Riding the bikes round. The Central Island having races, didn't we?
Yeah, the vicar, he was quite happy for the village children to sort of... I suppose in a way it was safer for them to be playing there than and less disruptive to the remainder of the village, I guess. I don't know.
We used to climb the trees like monkeys, don't we? Climbing about,
living
up there, swinging about.
Used to live in the trees when we were younger. Nowadays they
Well, you nearly hung yourself when you
yeah,
were in one tree.
You were shouting and hollering, weren't you? Yeah, trying to get some help. God. And no one kind. So in the end, I stood on your shoulders and got the rope.
Yeah, you know, that was at Latchmore, that was.
Yeah.
In an apple tree.
Well, that would have made the news, wouldn't it? Huh? Local.
In the High Street, there's a big chestnut tree that's still there, but that was another focus of children's attention, including ours, throwing sticks up to get the best conkers out of the tree.
Did you used to play conkers in the playground?
Yeah, you used
apparently
to
play. I don't do it now, do it. All health and safety prevents it from being done.
I have a bad memory of playing conkers in that one day I was using a galvanised roofing nail to try and put a hole through a conker, and I put it the wrong way around. I had the conker in my hand and hammering the nail into it, and eventually it popped through and went into my hand. So I've got a bad memory of that one. But yeah, that's the in the vicarage was lots of lovely trees that we remember quite well. There's a big yew tree there that is still there today, but. The medlar trees are gone. It's now a care home, which coincidentally my mum lives in there now, doesn't she?
Yeah, bless her.
So, yeah. And they've just expanded it, so even more of the site is now under buildings, but there you go.
Was your mum a good cook?
She was a fantastic cook. I miss mum's cooking now, but don't tell my missus that.
Shortbread she'd make
oh,
for
she
shortcake.
Always, yeah, she
short
always
cake,
had a baking day where she baked cakes and that.
He'd soak conkers for a few days in vinegar. But he obviously wanted to make the hole first, otherwise it would be... See, the ideal way would be to drill it, but you didn't have a drill in those days. You just had to pierce it with a nail and do it the right way, not like how I did it. But yes, you would play conkers with other kids, and you'd clock up a tally as to how many you'd broken with the old one, and so forth.
What did? Just for the purposes of the tape, so we get a visual idea of what it looks like. So
yeah, you'd use a boot lace with a knot on the end, and you thread it through, you know, thread it onto the lace, and you just sort of hold it like that. Yeah.
If you just tipped it, you'd go tips, and then you could have another go. But if you missed it totally, you then got to hold your conger out and let the other person have a fag out.
Yeah, and you just hold the conger in between your forefinger and the next finger, and hold it tight, and then sort of whack, aiming at the other person's conker. So.
And strings was the other one.
Yeah,
if you tangle, you go strings, wouldn't
you? Yeah, that would be your void.
And if the first person who says strings would then have the next.
Oh, right. Go, yeah, no, I can't remember. I thought you'd just have another go, but
that gave you a chance to have a go.
It's all rusty now. This is all bit. Dim memories, really.
Can you remember when they were pulling that old building down in the middle of Ludden Street? And we went up in the loft and we got all them birds' eggs, because that was going to be demolished. We thought, well, we could save all these eggs.
Was it Garrett's
eggs?
It the big tall place?
No, that was the other one behind old Jasper's, the haircutter.
Oh, that would have been one of the smaller.
That was a big house. It had big old England nook fireplaces and that in it, because you could climb up the chimneys. I remember climbing up one.
They were all Mr. Green's, the farmer's farm cottages along the.
Yeah, well, they'd already gone. I'm talking about the two that were behind what is now the Cat's Whiskers, that was Jasper's, the haircut.
I can't remember that very much.
That was full of house sparrow nests. And we had this idea that if we could get the eggs out and keep the nests, we could hatch them off rather than them all being as they were demolishing this house. That didn't work. None of them hatched out, which they wouldn't do. I mean, we were young then, a bit naive.
We're talking about the bit that, if you know where Ludham Garage is in High Street, opposite there, there was a row of cottages which were demolished. They were for agricultural workers. He worked for Green in the at the top of the Wilmack Horse Fen Road. There was a farm there, and they would live in those cottages and walk through Latchmore Park to the farm, which is why there is actually a footpath that's set up. They set it up from the high street through to Woolmack. You can walk through there still. But those cottages also had a big garden that went back so far, and there's fruit trees and all that. This is all very overgrown where we used to play.
That was
there.
Where them red gooseberries.
And then you went through a big hedge about halfway back through the site. There was a hole through there where the footpath went, and then it opened out into grassland. And there was the remains of an overgrown
bowling green. Yeah, bowling green one. And
to the right.
A hedge of cherry laurel, what we used to play in as well.
And then there was one or two big railway carriages.
Yeah, old railway carriages that we used to climb on top. We'd get all the hay, didn't we, and pile up a big pile beside it, and then we'd jump off the roof, didn't we?
Yeah, and in the laurel trees that you said bordered the bowling green,
yeah,
there was a overturned galvanised water butt, weren't there? And we used to get in there.
Yeah, so you can remember that. I can't remember
that.
It
was on its side in all the bushes.
I can remember there was a plant there with these little white
snowberries.
Snowberries, right? And we used to squash them, didn't we?
I caught my first dragonfly on Latchmore Park with a net.
That's also, that old bowling green is where I found a vole's nest, and I was silly enough to stick my finger in the hole, and that came out hanging on the end of my finger, didn't it?
Yeah, and you caught one in.
Yeah, I had one as a pet.
An airport, not the aerodrome place where you found a harvest mouse there, and that bit you. There's, again, you don't learn. Handle harvest mice, rodents.
Even then, I was fascinated by animals.
I'm that's what my main interest is now, is natural history and insects and plants and the like. I'm sort of studying that.
Getting back to the fishing, you said you regret going out there fishing. So what you,
the amount of time.
Can't you remember when we used to go out in the dark, go up Catfield Dyke, didn't we?
Yeah.
And we used to go across Hicklin Broad, and that was full of seagulls flying off as we go and throw them in the dark.
They would roost on the broad. I don't know whether they still do that, but yeah.
That was a sight, wasn't it?
Well, I used to pike fish after dark on the edge of...
We used to pike fishing top of Catfield at night time, didn't we? And you always used to catch the big fish out on the broad. I was stuck in the dyke catching the little ones, didn't I?
Got my big one there.
Yeah.
What's the knack of getting a big one?
I don't know. He caught the biggest.
Well, he did eventually get a big one.
He got a 30-pounder.
I had nearly a 32-pounder off Horsey 1 year.
Called me to come photograph it.
That was a long, long while ago. I had a ponytail at the time.
4 foot long, weren't it? We measured it.
Yeah.
So.
Abby Athers in his recording said they're blind pike. Is that right?
I don't know about blind.
No, I think they hunt by sight,
but they can also hunt by scent.
You might get blind.
I have caught a pike that was blind in one eye, but that still picked my bait up. So
I suppose they can smell.
Yeah,
and they might. They would then, if they were blind, they would just feed on dead stuff, I think, which is how we used to fish for them, weren't we? With mostly we'd use dead baits, but. Sometimes we'd live bait. Not that I would do it now, but that was an accepted, still is an accepted practice, but frowned on a bit.
He also said they had like green eyes. Is that right?
Yeah, I could show you some pictures of them. They're fearsome looking creatures, but they certainly I suppose he would have fished for them for
the
food.
Pot, he would have
pot.
I mean,
he would have kept them for food, definitely.
I used to go down, what was that, Burnt Fen, didn't I? Burnt Fen Broad. And I remember bringing one home for Mum to make some fish cakes with, didn't I? I think that was a 10 pounder, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, they're bony though, aren't they? The muddy taste.
But they were lovely fish cakes, they were.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I did enjoy them, but maybe that's because I caught. You know. But I thought that they were some of the best fish cakes I'd ever tasted. But like you say, they're full of. You've got to get the buns out, haven't you? You've got little pitchfork buns in them, haven't they?
Yeah.
Did your mother cook anything else that was kind of caught wild?
Well, Dad always used to go out with his gun, so we were brought up on game, really. I mean, we're certainly at water hens and coots, haven't we?
I can't recall that.
I can
remember.
Because he used to shoot
pigeons, rabbits, pheasants, partridges, anything like that.
Yeah.
But.
Can you remember when Mum used to be cooking the hare, how that used to smell? She didn't like the smell of them, did she?
No, she didn't. Very rich, gamey.
Cool.
And Dad would always be.
He'd draw the pheasants and what hay in the kitchen, didn't he? So
plucking and that in the kitchen, and that was.
So you had this unpleasant odour.
Well, that was how we learnt to do it. I could pluck and dress a pheasant today if I haven't done it for a long while.
I remember there used to be a local old boy, he's gone now, Philip Footer, who used to pick a pheasant up off the side of the road, and he'd bring it round to me. He'd say, Martin, can you pluck this for me? I'd get about 50 pence for it, didn't I? That used to take me about an hour to pluck and dress it.
What did you spend your 50p on?
Probably just sweets, I suppose. I don't know. But like Andy say, Dad taught us how to pluck a pheasant. You had to pluck it a certain way, otherwise you tear it.
And as well. So.
And ducks, you'd pluck them the opposite way, didn't you? I think you used to go, you'd have the head of the duck pointed downwards, and you'd take the feather off like that. But one at the other way with a pheasant. I forget now, I might have got it the wrong way round. That might be that the duck was the head up, and you'd pluck it.
I'd do it head down, I would myself, but there you go.
But if you got it wrong, you'd end up tearing a pheasant, didn't you? They were horrible things to pluck, weren't they, for tearing.
Mm.
Pigeons were the easiest.
Well, it depends on how long they'd been hung.
Yeah, pigeons were the easiest. The feathers used to fall off them, but I think, because Dad always used to pluck them, didn't you? And Mum used to make a stew, and they always used to look like little frogs lying on your plate, didn't they? Can't you remember them? Because he'd even pluck the legs and the wings, where most people just cut the breast meat off, don't they, or chuck the rest.
Yeah, I wouldn't bother plucking and gutting a pigeon.
But my mum, she absolutely was terrified of frogs, and yet these pigeons lying in a stew always used to remind me of a frog lying in a swamp.
We used to work for the Vicar, didn't we, when we were young?
Yeah.
I think on a Saturday morning?
We used to get, how much did we use to
50p,
get?
50p, was it?
50p or 75p? I think it was 75p.
We cut the grass, weren't we? There was a big, big old mower he had, it was petrol mower.
Yeah, it cut through brambles a lot.
And we'd go round, and you'd just keep going round in a circle, and keep going round, gradually getting narrow, smaller and smaller until the centre.
He also, can you remember, he had that old blowtorch thing that we used to do the drive with?
Yeah, big gas blow.
This blowtorch, those stuns and what, he'd be flying up and hitting the cover that went over top on it, didn't it? As the stones are heating up.
He was a bit concerned that we were careful with these things, but we were teenagers then.
We used to use that over in the churchyard, didn't we?
Yeah.
That old blowtorch.
Yeah, it'd have a cover on it, a square cover, so you'd sort of. And it had wheels as well, and you'd wheel it along, and
you
would burn a bit.
Held it in a place too long, the stuns used to heat up, and then I used to fly up and hit that guard, didn't I? But I think he was worried about him flying out and hitting you in the face, didn't he?
This was Reverend Fred, when he lived there. He, when I married Marable, we were probably the last but one that he married before he retired. And
he took us on a day trip once, didn't he, out to Alton Broad. And this old boy, it took him, what was it, about 10 attempts to pass his test. He was terrible at driving, wasn't he? And he took us all the way to Alton Broad, and we managed to get there somehow, didn't we?
Yeah,
and then we went out in a book, didn't we, on Alton Broad.
A bit worrying.
And it was about four or five on us, weren't there, that went along. And we found out where the throttle cable was in the book. So as he's going along, we kept revving it up so that all of a sudden old butt would go along like clappers, wouldn't it? And then we'd slow it right down and he'd think, what's the matter with it? That ain't gone. And then it roar away again, wouldn't it?
We used to commandeer boots down at Wilmag, didn't we?
Yeah.
And go exploring some of the docks at the back.
We hauled one on, didn't we? Try to lift it bigger, didn't we? You remember that?
Just being naughty like any other kid, really, I suppose.
Put a hole in it, didn't we? So we took it back before that sunk. Made a hasty retreat.
Did you go to church at all? Did your parents, were they religious?
We went to Sunday school at the Methodist chapel.
We are both good Christians. Yeah.
Well, you try to live your life as you would want to be treated yourself. So that's what that taught me, I suppose, to treat other people with a bit of respect. But there you go. I usually do that. But yeah, there's the Methodist chapel in the village.
That's beautiful, isn't it? It's little flint.
Yeah. All napped flint. And I think it's still used today. I think there's still a regular meeting of church. But it's all the pews are gone now that we're in. There was central ones and two exterior rows of pews. And the children would meet in the back for the Sunday school, and they had, you know, had classes with
Bible stories
and then it got to a certain time and we would come in through a side bit and sit for some of the main service, perhaps not all of it, I don't know, I can't recall too much of the detail. But once a year we would
have to do a speech, don't we? It would be terrifying
and call
used to hate it.
They would ask you to recite a poem or sing a song, and you'd have to learn it off by heart. And they called it the anniversary day, didn't they, or something? And you'd have to sing or say a piece. And like you say, it was quite. Cool. Are you getting annoyed?
Yeah, I was like, what's that rumble?
My stomach. But yes, that's. That's what I remember of the Sunday school.
One more question, and then my dad was quite naughty as a child, and his mum got angry and gave him a good hiding. Did you ever experience that as children?
I did from dad once. Yeah, I got the belt once. I think it was just that one occasion.
Mum would get you a clip round the lug, wouldn't she?
Yes, you would.
If you'd done something wrong.
But
you can't do that now, but I don't think things have got any better. Her father always, she reckoned, used to be pretty strict.
I can't recall why I got that. That was when we were living in the school road. I don't know, Dad snapped about something, and I do remember.
I must admit, I can't remember it. So I weren't there at the time.
I don't recall anything else other than just getting a clip round the ear or whatever.
Okay, so part of the notes that will be attached to this interview is the fact that we've got some photographs of some of the gravestones in the Ludden churchyard, which we looked at when we first met you two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just remind us who's buried there, part of the family?
Well, that was the ones that I remember showing you, which were around the back, was of my our great aunt Eva, who was actually Ella, was her real name, but we knew her all her life as Eva, and her husband Reggie. Yes, this is John Jeremy and Eva Florence. That's my great grandfather and grandmother, great grandmother.
And that's the brother of Abiathar.
That's it. Yeah, brother of Abiathar, I think is how you say it. And next to them is, I think, Lucy and Francis. Now
you,
I think
you said you didn't know.
I think Francis. On that table there might be John's brother. I'm not sure. I'm not sure of the link there, I'm afraid. And that's Ella, yeah, Eva as we know it, and Reggie. That's our great aunt.
Well,
and great uncle.
As my what do I call
mum's aunt and uncle.
My godmother.
Was it?
Eva. Eva was my godmother, and
Reggie,
Robin. Robin was my godfather.
Oh, Robin is Eva's son. So yeah, that's who they are. My dad and his sort of family, and my paternal grandparents are buried in the front of the church.
Okay.
In a sort of small area there, several of them. Some of them are buried in unmarked graves, I think. So.
Okay. So just to close things up, you're aware we're doing these interviews as part of the study on dialects. What are your thoughts about dialects? Do you think you've got strong dialects?
Not really, but as people say, I can hear a Norfolk twang from me a bit. But I think having worked in an environment where I'm sort of got lots of people who perhaps not from Norfolk, but mine sort of faded a bit. But I think Martin, having lived in Norfolk, is...
Yeah, I probably have. I work quite a lot on my own. So...
I certainly
say things that you don't, don't I? There's certain things that I come out with that you don't.
Yeah, well, I say there's, sort of dialect words or whatever from the past that get handed down, but I'm not aware of anything in particular.
Is it important to you that kind of continues, the Norfolk dialect?
I think my daughter... She sounds as though she definitely comes from Norfolk. I mean, I wouldn't even thought Dad really sounded.
You know, it's not what you, it's what you live with, isn't it?
Yeah.
So whether you pick it up or not.
I mean, there were certain things. I mean, we were saying this earlier, weren't we? He never used to call a snail a snail. That was always a dodman.
Yeah.
Which is a Norfolk saying, and. There's certain things I say. I mean, I never call a pied wagtail a pied wagtail. That's always a nanny dishwasher.
Oh.
And that's what my daughter call it now, because she's heard me call it a nanny dishwasher. And apparently that's because they're black and white, and the servant women always wore black and white, why that saying came about.
Penny wagtail, that's what I used to call
them. Did
it? Penny wagtail.
Yeah.
Any other words, Martin, that you...
Well, the old herons that we always call a harncer, don't we? But,
yeah. Well, I know them as a harncer, but I don't actually refer to them anymore as a harncer.
Do you ever hear them called Old Frank?
I call them Old Frank sometimes, because that's what they say, you know? When they go over here, they keep shouting out Frank.
What, the sound?
That's weird, really, isn't it? I mean, old wood pigeon, when you listen to it, I always say, where's Kirsty, which is what my daughter's name is, so I always used to say that to her.
Do you know by the wood Tabitha. It says, my toe hurts.
Yeah.
My toe hurts.
Wood pigeons.
But they also go, where's Kirsty? But where's Kirsty?
You hear things in the mania, but
yeah.
The only thing I would sort of remember, like from my grandmother, she would always say, "What he call? What he call?
What's name and things like that."
What's name? Yeah. What thingy bob? That sort of just things she'd come out. I do use, you know, what he call.
And you were using rum earlier.
Rummin, yeah.
Yeah, rummin.
That's a rummin, yeah. Well, something's not upright, it's on the her.
Yeah, that was definitely.
But I think
a
that's sign. Quite commonplace.
Yeah. And sosh and ale in on the her.
Tosh and ale.
Sosh, we always used to call it sosh.
Mm. What about the little bit of wood you might get in stuck in your finger when you're doing some woodwork?
Splinters.
Yeah.
Get a splinter, yeah.
Splinter.
What do we call it? Shiver.
Shiver, yeah. That was the other. I don't call it that anymore now. But yeah, you get a shiver. Get a needle to take them out.
Matter of fact, they got one out this morning. I had to use a needle to get it out.
Shall
I go on to the questions here, please?
Yeah,
do you have mine? No? Do you? If you want to carry on.
Yeah, so we just got some pictures and you have to identify or give me the word that you would use for each of these pictures. I'll just, if you go one after the other, so that one.
Well, that's a hedgehog.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't call it anything else other than that, or hedge pig.
And that one.
Daddy long legs, we call them, but they're a crane fly, aren't they?
Yeah. Tipula Day.
Tipula Day, what's that?
Sorry, that's the correct term for the family. That's me, I study them, you see, so insects.
That's no Airwig.
Airwig, yeah.
Harry Wiggles, ever heard that?
These are sticky buds, but that's cleave, and we call them
sticky
buds.
Weed.
Sticky buds, I call them.
Well, that's cleavers, yeah. Goose grass. But the proper term is gallium, is the real name for it.
Sweets and cakes.
What's that?
I don't know what that is.
Is it a dewdrop?
Yeah.
Ah. Oh,
dewdrop.
See, yeah. Dewdrop.
Yeah. And this is a bag of...
bag of sweets.
Cushies.
Yeah. Cushies.
In fact, my great-grandfather on my dad's side used to know him, the children in the village used to know him as Cushy Beman.
They all had nicknames.
Cushy Bumman.
All on them in London used to have nicknames.
For Boomon, I said Cushy Bumman. He always would have a bag of sweets in his pocket and he'd be handing them out now and again.
Bread, that's bread, but what is it?
A roll. That's what I'd call it, a roll. A bread roll.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else to call it that, I'm afraid.
And is that a scone or a scone, huh?
Scone.
We call them scones, don't we?
Yeah. They're spring onions.
Yeah.
Piggyback, that's what you call that, isn't it? A piggyback ride.
Yeah, having a piggyback ride. And that's on the seesaw.
Yeah, seesaw.
There used to be one in the village, but I don't think they've got one in the...
We got
in
one at Ludham. They got one at Ludham still, yeah.
Not the original one.
No, not
it?
The original, but there is a seesaw on there because the grandkids go on it.
The original one was a big wooden with a massive metal bit in the middle.
Yeah.
And there are two metal handles on it.
That one was better than this one, what we got now.
I think that was sort of like semi-helping you to facilitate moving the... rather than that was all just down to you moving your weight, that was...
Yeah.
Okay, you need to now... Sorry, this is a bit like school. Complete the sentence by picking one of these words. So, the food was... was it proper gurt, very well tasty?
Right tasty. Was right tasty, I'd say. Yeah. I probably would could pick something that would be right or well or real.
Proper tasty.
I'd go for right.
Great. And then would you use one of these phrases? So he asked me to fix it and I was like, no way, do it yourself. Or I said, no way, do it yourself. I went. A bit of a harder one.
He asked me to fix it. I think I'd just say, I said, no way, do it yourself. Something a little bit more that you couldn't say, really.
Go do it yourself. Huh? No way, do it yourself. I just say.
I think you've got to just pick that bit in there, Martin.
Yeah,
one
you
of
just
those
say
ones.
One of these options.
Yeah.
That would just be I said.
Just be I said, yeah.
Yeah.
What would John say?
What would John say?
Forgive him. He asked me to fix it, and I said,
yeah.
I'd probably just say no.
And I said.
I said, do it yourself.
Mm. Okay. So we get everybody to do these questions, so this is like the kind of comparison.
Yeah.
And then I've just got a few more questions, and then we're done. Okay, what do you call a room in a house for storing food?
Pantry.
Yeah, pantry.
If you've eaten any food, if you haven't eaten food for a long time, you're bound to feel really
hungry. Or would you say I'm
starving?
Yeah.
So I'm starving.
Yeah, because we've often talked about.
Although
you're not really starving.
We don't really.
No.
Yeah. You say that and all, don't you? When your kids say, "Oh, I'm starving," you don't know what starving's like.
No.
But that's the first thing
that's
coming to my mind when you ask me
that. That has been used quite a lot, yeah.
What words do you use for something to eat? Now, this is kind of a bit vague, this question, but what they're trying to ask is, like, if you take some food to work or school or, like, a snack.
What, like a picnic or something like that? Is that what you mean? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you just take packed lunch or picnic.
I just call it a packed lunch one.
Yeah, we ain't got any special names for it, I'm afraid.
Not known.
No. What do you call a coffee that you might get from a cafe with lots of milk in it?
A Costa, I reckon.
Milky coffee, you know, it's just what it is. I know
is that really tall one you get in the glass? Do you remember?
Oh,
that?
Yeah, a latte thing. Is it a latte?
Knickerbocker Glory? No,
yeah,
it's a
Martin's right, yeah.
Latte.
What's the dairy product that you spread on toast and sandwiches?
Dairy product. Butter.
Yeah, butter.
Which word or phrase would you use to indicate a temporary break in a game? When points cannot be scored.
Have a pause. We're going to have a pause.
Just have a break. I don't know.
Yeah. There's lots. There's like old words like fainites and packs. And
they're all gone, I reckon.
Yeah. We used packs at my school.
Yeah.
A long time ago. Which word or... no, I've done the one. If you fall over in the playground, your knee might be...
Hutton.
Grazed. You graze your knee, won't you?
Yeah. If you...
Well, you say hut your knee, won't you?
Well, yeah, but that's...
Well,
take the skin off, don't you?
But I think it's good to hear it from Martin with his a bit of a Norfolk accent.
Yeah,
Hutton's good.
Yeah.
Would you get us... What would happen when it stopped bleeding?
Get scared on it.
And then what do you do next?
Pick it.
Make it bleed again.
If you got covered in dirt in the playground, when you get home, you might need to get in the
bath.
Yes. Yeah. When children are very excited, you might say they're full of
beans.
Yeah. You probably would say full of beans.
At the end of a long tiring day, you'd say you're absolutely
knackered.
Yeah, knackered.
Yeah. Which word would you use to mean not attending school? So if you were being naughty and you didn't go to school one day.
Scoring.
Yeah, scoring. Scoring off, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You wouldn't say bunking?
No, scoring.
Well, I have heard that phrase, but I'd use scoring.
That's what I'd use. I'm scoring off.
I did do.
Sometimes when children are being very naughty, their parents tell them that someone would come and take them away. What would you call this mysterious person?
The boogeyman.
Now that you've said it, that's probably the only thing that I can remember as being used. But
one of the broads that's on, they had a story about Will o' the Wisp.
Oh, right, yeah.
Do you know that?
Yeah.
History.
That's to do with the marsh gas coming off, isn't it? Or possibly there's a moth that flies in the marshes that is called the goose moth.
That's his real name.
No, well, it's white. Uh-huh. And it'll dance in a figure of eight.
Oh, on a moonlit night, and that you'll see.
You'll see it at dusk, you know, sort of just in the dark. And that might look a bit strange, I suppose, but I think Will o' the Wisp is from marsh gas that might self-ignite or whatever. So you get a little flame or something, but...
You've never seen it?
No, I can't see how marsh gas
can ignite, can you? Huh?
No, man.
I spend a lot of time down on a marsh, but I had never seen the phenomenon.
Same here. I used to go down there a lot after dark for catching moths. But it's quite a health hazard now going down there with the ticks that are very prevalent in the fens now.
Complete the sentence. You grow crops and raise animals on a
farm.
When you walk in the countryside after heavy rain, your shoes get covered in
mud.
When driving in, actually, the mud question. Do you have any other words for mud, like clumps of mud or
clods?
Yeah.
Clods of mud.
What's a clod of mud in your head?
A dried lump, I suppose.
Yeah.
As it reminded me there of a thing that we used to do when we were kids.
Wurgle sticks, you put a lump of mud on it. And then wurgle it.
And on a stick, and you'd throw it at people. Not the stick, but the thing would just throw it and come off the end. And
maybe that's what you would do when Dad gave you the belt. You perhaps wurgled a load of mud at me then, didn't you?
Possibly.
Yeah, never know.
It was a good shot. It was a good shot.
You call it wogled.
Wogle, yeah.
Wogling, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Do you use that word for anything else, or is it literally specifically for
that?
Just for
that. We just call it wogle.
I've done it for years.
Want to be a piece of willow. Well, nice aura.
Yeah. Or something nice and whippy.
Sycamores.
Yeah.
Just make swords out of sycamore twigs. Stems, you get the sycamore and the two sides come out and it made it look like you've got a rapier, you know, sort of. Play sword fighting.
When driving in icy or wet weather, you must take care because the roads are...
Skiddy. Slippery. No, slippery. I would think slippery.
I would just say icy, if they're icy.
I would say, watch out, that's slippery.
Which word do you use as a term of endearment, even with strangers?
It could be that you're going into a shop to buy something and...
So, or the taxi man, or might say it, or just with anybody that you're friends with.
Mate.
Bore?
Well, you do occasionally say bore. right bore and things like that.
Yeah, I don't know. Right,
I mean, it's like you always call it Womack, don't you? But I always call it Wannock.
Yeah.
Because I'd heard that called Wannock before, and I always thought that was a better name for it.
What's Wannock?
Wannock War. Womack.
Oh, it's
a my saying for Womack.
Yeah, it's a body of water.
Yeah, it's a body of water,
done right. But I would never call it Womack. I'd always call it Wannock War.
Right.
I even call it that to my wife and my daughter. Don't know why. I just think that sounds better, don't it?
Which word would you use to refer to someone who's very attractive?
Beautiful. Yeah. He'd say something different.
Well, I just saw that. She's a looker.
Yeah. Beautiful is.
Yeah, well.
Where I'm from, everyone's fit.
Now, fit is a fairly recent thing, I think, isn't it?
Or
not, that's.
Or hunky would be my old word.
in Norwich, where I was kind of raised, it was she's a right bit of stalky.
Yeah.
Oh.
Never heard that one.
No.
Bit of stuff is another one.
I think Bernard, he's got a lot to answer for with this beautiful thing, hasn't he? But that is what a lot of people call something attractive, isn't it? Oh, that's beautiful. Or the day, if that's nice and sunny. Cool, what a beautiful day.
Yeah, but they're talking about people, though.
Yeah, I know, but something nice.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Did you think you're...
Oh, that's a beautiful garden.
Did you think Sally was a nice bit of stuff? That's what...
Well, probably. I did it at the time.
There's words that you use when you're a teenager, isn't there? And
yeah,
there's
that's
words
right.
that you
yeah,
use
that's
when
a long
older.
While ago.
Yeah.
Do you have a word for spreading rumours?
Yarns. Well, that's a,
oh,
that's a yarn, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I'd say yarn. Stop spreading yarns.
A picture's not hanging straight.
On the hook?
Yeah, definitely.
On the hook.
Cool, I can't stand pictures that aren't.
Me too.
Again, that's what Mum always used to say, you know.
And we've already done this one. What do you call a very small piece of wood that has got into your finger?
Yeah, like you say, splinter or shiver.
Shiver, I call it shiver. Well, that's what a snake would slither, wouldn't it? But
you had a nasty old shiver in your thumb once, didn't it?
Nearly lost my thumb, didn't I?
Thumb nearly went gangrene, didn't it?
A bit of reed went underneath my nail, and they had to take my nail and that all off because my thumb was going black, and they couldn't cure it with antibiotics. So
they did eventually.
Eventually they did, but after removing the nail, that got better then, didn't it? So
we must have a thing about thumbs, because I nearly chopped mine off as well, didn't I?
I think
machete.
Dad nearly chopped his finger off with a bit of reed, didn't he? I think once.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry,
it's
we
so
digress.
Sharp. No, it's just saying it's so sharp. What do you call a person who mends shoes and boots?
Cobbler.
Yeah, cobbler.
Yeah. And then do you have any other words you'd like to tell us?
We've already done that, haven't we?
Yeah.
I can't think of much
else. Say the old snail, the Dodman, Dan always is calling Dodmans.
Yeah.
What was that? That person who used to come and knock on the door and bring us sweets. What was St. Valentine's?
Yeah.
Apparently that's all dying out. Have you ever heard of St. Jack Valentine. Well, when we were kids, you'd hear a knock at the door, and I'd say, "God, just go and see who
this
that
is."
On
February the 14th.
And there'd be a bag of sweets on you on the doormat, and what are you and Jack Valentine has been? Well, apparently, I've only ever heard one person up Norwich who'd heard about it, but a lot of people had never heard of Jack Valentine, so that seemed to be something that's dying out and all.
I'd never heard of it, but only until 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so that was
did
common.
It with,
every
did it
year,
with our children, and
yeah.
every year,
and I think even my daughter put sweets out and by the door for for her little son.
So it was like Father Christmas bringing a gift. It's like
that was just a another little thing that you look forward to every year.
You had to try to do the knock on the door and then get back indoors before
like
they worked it out. So.
Like Knock Down Ginger, whatever it's called.
I haven't heard of that one.
Well, it's the same thing, you knock on the door and then run off. And, but you wouldn't leave anything, you're just like causing trouble.
Well, yeah, we used to do that in the village. So.
Can't you remember that time when we used to collect Krona bottles for sweet money?
Yes, oh yeah.
And you'd get 2.5p for a Krona bottle, and we used to take
them
down
on the riverbanks.
Poor old Mrs. Golden's, her shop in there no more. There's two big houses built on it down at Wanwick, or Wilmack as people call it. Mm. And we used to take them in her shop. She'd give you the money and you'd buy a Mars bar or something.
Ice creams.
And the next day you'd go back and fancy some sweets, and we'd be able to climb over the compound where she used to store these Krona bottles. We'd sell them.
You did? I never did any
of
that.
And we'd get another Mars bar.
Poor Mrs. Gold. Yeah, you'd find lots of Krona bottles and ones which get a deposit.
Yeah.
They don't do deposits anymore on bottles. You'd bring them home, clean them up a bit, and then take and get some money back for them.
They still do that in on the continent, don't they?
Yeah, my dad used to do it as well. He used to get them at Ludden Bridge, and him and his mate walk the riverbanks down near Ludden Bridge, get Krona bottles, and then take them in. Mrs.
Shame, really, because when you found them on the riverbank, you weren't worried about all the other rubbish that was lying with it. You were just out the Krona bottle, weren't you? So you'd leave all the other rubbish lying there, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Do you know the wild blueberries? What do you call those? Do you have a word for them?
A blueberry?
Yeah.
Well, we only get blackberries right now.
Do you mean
Well, I read this dewberry.
Dewberries, yeah, you get dewberries about, yeah.
What do they look like?
Well, like a bramble, but that's not so much prickle on the stem, a bluer looking stem. And the berry is sort of dusted, so it might look a bit bluish, but that's, what do they call that? I don't know. That's, there's a name for it, where you get that sort of haziness. You get it on grapes as well, don't you?
Just plums, like you get
plums,
when you
buff
off a plum.
You only got to touch it and it goes. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, you get dewberries. Got some grown in the garden.
Yeah.